Executive Officer, Mr. Kelvin Flory.
Thank you. Please remain upstanding for the opening prayer and reconciliation statement. Almighty God, we humbly beseech Thee to vouchsafe the blessing upon this council, direct and prosper its deliberations, the advancement of Thy glory, and the welfare of the people whom we serve. Amen. The reconciliation statement, Melton City Council acknowledges that the land it now occupies has a history that began with the Indigenous occupants of the Kulin Nation. Council pays its respects to the Kulin Nation people and their elders and descendants past and present. You may be seated. Before we go on to the agenda, I just want to make a very, very, very quick statement. To everybody that's been in the galleries now for 10 years or more, they know that occasionally the mayor of the day has allowed clarification or a further statement to be made to questions from the gallery. Unless you're a brand new person to the chambers, I won't, and the items before us on the agenda for that evening, I won't be taking questions from the gallery. We have lots of ample opportunity to interact one-on-one, and sometimes it has just been taken for granted and run with. So please accept that for the next 12 months, unless it's vitally urgent. I don't want to see a show of hands. Thank you. Apologies and leave of absence.
No, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Changes to the order of business?
No change to the order.
Okay, deputations. Have we got a very special young lady in the gallery? Is Madison Parker? Oh, there she is. She was hiding. This is Madison Parker. Now, I believe I'm going to be handing over to this young lass to make a presentation. Come forward, love. Thank you very, very much, Maddie. Can I get you all to give Maddie another round of applause? Can I also make sure we've got copies of these in the libraries? Is that okay? Or do I need a notice of motion for that too?
I think we can organise that, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. All right. After that, let's see what we can follow. Please. Shush. Declaration of any pecuniary interest, other interest and conflict of interest of any councillor or executive.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I advise that prior to the meeting I have received written notice from Councillor Dunn in relation to Officer's Report 11.4, Heritage Advisory Committee, declaring an indirect financial interest in those minutes. And I myself declare an interest in item 18.4, in that is an indirect financial interest as a shareholder in Telstra.
Any other indirect or direct conflicts of interest?
No, Madam Mayor.
The adoption and confirmation of the minutes of the previous meeting. The recommendation before you, have I got a mover for those minutes?
Madam Mayor, I'll move that the meeting of the Ordinary Council held on 21st October 2014 and the statutory meeting of Council held on 20th October 2014 be confirmed as true and correct record.
Now, give the former Mayor, Councillor Turner, a big round of applause. That's the last time, I promise, Councillor Turner. Do I have a seconder for the recommendation?
Happy to second that, Madam Mayor.
We have a mover being Councillor Turner and a seconder being Councillor Majlik for the motion before us. All those in favour? The vote's carried. Thank you. Was that right?
Good.
Okay, correspondence in Woods. Sorry, can I hear people chatting? I'm going to be mean to everybody but Maddie. Okay, parliamentary and departmental letters received by the Mayor. There's only one that came in, and it was actually received by our CEO, and it was to do with the policing coverage for Diggers Rest Township. And it basically, you can all read it in your agendas. It will wait and see what the community of Diggers Rest in the consultation phase takes us through, but there are two different areas that, or two different divisions that do both Melton and the Sunbury areas, so there'll be some shifts in that if indeed Diggers Rest finally does go to Sunbury. Right, if there's no more... there's a recommendation before us that the parliamentary and departmental letters be received by the Mayor. And noted, is there a mover and a seconder for that?
I'll move it, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cagliari. Seconder?
I'll second that. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Carley. I have a mover being Councillor Cagliari, seconder Councillor Carley. For the motion, all those in favour? Thank you. Motion's been carried. Petitions and joint letters. I believe there's quite a few. Who would like to go first?
Yes, Madam Mayor, I've actually got a petition. It's in regards to the retention of the Melbach program, which I'd like to present to you.
Do we know how many signatures are on that petition? 765. Thank you, Councillor Dunn. It basically says that the humble petition of we, the undersigned residents, ratepayers of Melton in the state of Victoria, swear that we urgently request that Melton City Council rescind its decision to cease support for their Melbach program. The impending closure of Melbach will impact adversely on numerous local families who are dependent on the respite offered to its clients by this program. And basically, there's another two, but I think we get the gist. Thank you for these petitions. Who takes guardianship of that?
Madam Mayor, I've got a submission as well from Melbach. Council has received a joint submission from 130 individuals requesting Council to reverse its decision to close Melbach House respite facility. They are seeking Council is to consider its decision as they have surveyed users' cares and identified information which must be known to Council in making its decision, which will be forwarded to Council for its consideration.
Thank you, Councillor Turner. So that's a joint letter with 130 signatures. Put them together. All right, resumption of debate or other business carried over from previous meeting?
No, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Public question time.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We have 30 questions this evening. So the first one is from David O'Connor. Mr. O'Connor is in and Mrs. O'Connor. Yes, Mrs. O'Connor is here. The question reads, Melton City Council currently provide hard waste tipping coupons as part of the annual property rate notices. Would Council please provide details with respect to the unused percentage of coupons over the entire rate base of the municipality? And this question is referred to General Manager Planning and Development, Mr. Luke Shannon.
Thank you, Mrs. O'Connor, for your question. As you know, with each rate notice or annual rate notice, two coupons are issued to each property. That allows the property owner to either have a hard waste collection directly from the property, which would generally be in the order of 3 cubic metres of hard waste. Alternatively, those coupons can be redeemed at the Melton Recycling Facility. In terms of the last financial year, there were 3,306 hard waste collections undertaken from individual properties, so that is directly from the property in question. There were, by contrast, 20,771 passes redeemed at the Melton Recycling Facility, bearing in mind that each property has two of those passes. I'm happy to provide more particular details of the last financial year and, by comparison, the previous financial year to give you an indication of those exact numbers and the percentage of uptake relative to the number of properties in the municipality. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shannon.
Next question, excuse me, is also from Annette O'Connor, and it reads, as part of the future expansion of Diggers Rest, would Council please provide a detailed breakdown of proposed infrastructure delivery specific to Bloomdale and St Ives developer contributions? Again, Mr. Luke Shannon.
Thank you again, Mrs. O'Connor. Council has in place what's known as a development contribution plan for each of its growth areas, and that includes Diggers Rest. I'm more than happy to provide you the particular details of that contribution plan as it applies to the two particular developments that you've outlined, being Bloomdale and St Ives. The details that I will provide you will give you an indication of the infrastructure to be provided by the developer under that plan and the actual financial value of those works. Thank you.
The next question this evening is from Luke Eaton, and Mr. Eaton is in the gallery. The question reads, a survey conducted with clients and carers of Melbach Respite House revealed that the ability for these people to access extra respite is restricted to an allocation of 3 nights. The restriction is because Melbach is full. How can it be that a respite house which has 100% client satisfaction, fully compliant with quality requirements and has attracted additional DHS funding over the last 4 years, be closed by council due to falling numbers if it is full? General Manager Community Services Maurie Heaney will respond.
Thanks, Luke, for your question. First of all, I can confirm that Melbach House has declined, first of all, in its utilisation. Melbach House provides overnight respite, of course, but also provides opportunities for aged care. The facility is funded dual-like, and that is funded from the federal government and also the Department of Human Services. The 3 nights restriction comes about because of the amount of beds that are in the facility, and is somewhat from memory around about 7. One of those beds are kept for emergency clients, which are we advise by when that's to be utilised, and that's strictly from the Department of Human Services when that bed is to be utilised, and we're advised of that basically weekly. I'm happy to provide further information if you like on that one, Luke. Thank you.
Okay. Next question is also from Luke Eaton. The question reads, is Council aware that in the Melton City Council Disability Plan, it is estimated that 4.9% of the population have disabilities causing profound or severe restriction of communication, mobility and self-care, i.e. 4,750 residents. Melbach Respite provides a very effective respite for carers and clients. How is Council to manage the needs of its disabled population by closing the Melbach Respite House? Is Council effectively discounting disabled people's needs and avoiding the need to support disabled people's carers in respite? Again, Maurie Heaney will respond.
Thank you again, Luke. First of all, we believe that the best and appropriate organisation to support the respite needs of people with disabilities and carers will come from what we believe are specialised disability organisations that have the superior supports and processes in place to do such, to provide such a service. Council is very strong on its advocacy and will continue to advocate to attract a range of disability service providers to the city. An example of that is council has just gone out to an expressions of interest for a former nursing home, being Reg Geary House, with specifically an interest for a community service organisation to take up, you like, some of the slack within the city. That is in due process at the moment, and I won't comment much more on that, and the same will take place with the current Mulbach House property situated where it is at the moment. So we are concerned about people with disability. Yes, it is in our disability plan, and we are very strong in advocating and are doing so at the moment with the state government in a number of ways, and where possible, we intend to bring out other organisations with the support of the state government into this city to provide those services where possible. Thanks, Luke.
Okay. The next question is from Danny Eaton, who's in the gallery. And the question reads, a meeting of 22 clients and carers involved with Mulbach last evening hold grave concerns that council is not seriously seeking that Mulbach survives after the closure. They believe that in setting the date to close Mulbach without currently having even commenced the tender process to seek alternate providers is effectively a death wish for respite in Melton. We want to know why isn't Mulbach retained until the completion of the tender process, so that if a successful contractor is identified, that the transition may occur smoothly with minimum impact of the vulnerable and disadvantaged in the community. Mulbach is certainly a more attractive offering to providers if it is still functional. Again, Mr. Murray Heaney.
Thanks, Danny, and Danny's in the gallery, I think. Council's required to determine the final operations and the date for the Mulbach respite service as per our funding arrangements, if you like, from the state and the federal government, because we're dual funded for that facility and the services that operate from that facility. I need to make it very clear at this stage that council at the moment does not intend to advertise for a contract, if you like, or expressions of interest for that provider. Council has resolved to advertise for an expressions of interest for a purchase or a lease to purchase or a lease of that facility to provide community services to this city with a preference of respite. That is our priority. We are advocating with the Department of Human Services, and I can tell you we had the hierarchy out last week to have the conversation with them about having the discussion with their service providers to come and talk to this council about the opportunity that this house will provide for them and other organisations in the future. So those conversations are happening, as I said previously in the last question, and we'll continue to advocate to those groups.
The next question is also from Danny Eaton, and it reads, Mulbach has provided in 2012-13 total respite hours of 28,615, and in 13-14, 28,330. We are told that achieving targets is increasingly difficult due to decrease in client base. It is believed that this is untrue, and we seek audited information and details about the so-called targets to confirm usage has actually declined. Again, Mr. Murray Heaney will respond.
Thanks again, Danny, for your question. Happy to provide information on the targets that we're obliged to respond to from our government, or governments, if you like, in relation to Mulbach House. I can tell you it has declined in its service delivery, and that's been a continuous decline in the last 5 years. And I'm happy to provide you, as I said, the numbers that we respond to for those two governments and the information that we'll provide will state that. And that's the targets that we're obliged to and the targets that we've reported on. Thank you.
Next question is submitted by Michelle Mendez, and Michelle is in the gallery. Question reads, when will the extension of Melton Health commence, and also the transfer of health services in Council's building. Will any services be disrupted during the building? Again, Murray Heaney, General Manager, Community Services, will respond.
Thank you, Michelle, for your question, as I see you under that bar there. I can tell you, as from yesterday, Mr. Torrey and myself had a strategic health forum meeting with the councillors, with Moorabool and Jerrawarra Health, and the discussion at that table at the time that the expectation is that that facility would be built in around about to 2 and 2.5 years. I believe that negotiations and contracts have been entered into for design, design consultants, professionals, and it's on target for that time. So 2 to 2.5 years is our indication from Jerrawarra, as from yesterday, Michelle.
And in respect of the second element of the question with disruption to services?
It's my belief that there'll be no disruption for services. It's not Council's intent to have Jerrawarra Health relocated in any such way until the new provision is ready up in Barry's Road.
Thank you. Next question is also from Michelle Mendez, and it reads, do residents get notification that speed humps are being installed in or near their homes? And this question is referred to Mr. Luke Shannon for response.
Thank you, Michelle, for your question. Council has a program each year of installing speed humps, if you like, throughout various estates, particularly where there's issues of speeding vehicles. And the purpose of speed humps is obviously to slow vehicles down to provide a safer environment for residents, not only in the street but the surrounding neighbourhood. Council does consult with residents in the directly affected streets. In the first instance, we would write a letter, or we do write a letter to the residents to provide an opportunity for them to give an indication as to their preferred type of speed hump. Secondly, we would then write, once a final speed hump design had been chosen, to advise the residents of that design. So, in answer to your question, there is direct consultation, however it is with those property owners in the directly affected streets and not streets that are necessarily in the nearby vicinity. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke.
The next question is from Mr. Alan Fairweather. Mr. Fairweather is in the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
His question reads, why has Council planted all the trees at the eastern end of Centenary Avenue where the road is supposed to be duplicated, or are they not going to duplicate it, thus negating Council's decision to open Thrice Lane once Centenary Avenue duplication is completed? Again, Mr. Luke Shannon will respond.
Thank you, Alan, for your question. I can confirm that in time Centenary Avenue will be fully duplicated. However, the section in question, which is effectively between the roundabout outside the school and the Gisborne-Melton Road, there are no immediate plans to duplicate that road. However, the road reservation is clearly there to enable that to happen in the fullness of time. Council has undertaken over the last 12 to 18 months an extensive street tree planting program, and I'm aware that there have been numerous trees planted in Centenary Avenue in the area to which you refer, in other words, the eastern end. We would generally design the location of those trees to be planted in such a way that in the event the road is duplicated eventually, or when it is duplicated, that those trees don't need to be removed. I would obviously need to validate that in terms of the specific trees you're referring to. I will do that, and I'm happy to discuss that further with you. Thank you.
Next question also from Mr. Fairweather, and it reads, seeing as Council abandoned the rezoning proposal on the property in Outlook Ride, Kurrinjang, where the large blocks are, and now the property is up for expressions of interest with the ad showing 70 plus blocks. If it is sold, does this mean we will have to go through all the objection processes again, or will Council's decision stand? Again, Mr. Luke Shannon.
Thank you, Alan, for your question. I am aware, and I have noticed in the Metropolitan Papers, certainly expressions of interest for that property in question. Council's current position in relation to that property is that, as you're aware, Council effectively refused the proposed rezoning and development of that site into, if you like, conventional residential lots. Clearly, if a new owner takes possession of the property, they may reapproach Council with a new proposal, and I regret that that puts the residents perhaps through a similar process that you've been through at least twice previously. However, Council's current position is quite clear. However, I cannot rule out whatever a new proponent or a new owner might come forward with. In the event that that does happen, council would obviously need to closely consult with the local residents again to seek your views on any proposal. But at the moment, we have no proposal whatsoever. Thank you.
Next question is from Mr. Mario Casia, and Mr. Casia's in the gallery. This reads, my public question with respect from the Casia family is about 402 Clark Road, Rockbank, PSP 1080 Corroit. It follows the meeting at Caroline Springs Library on the 10th of the 11th about the future development of the land in PSP 1080. The Metropolitan Planning Authority, City of Melton staff planners were present at the time, and we had the opportunity to provide submissions on how the Casia family wants to develop the land. In essence, the question tonight is that Mr. Casia would like to have a meeting with planning officers of council, in particular planning manager, general manager of planning and development, and chief executive, in relation to the final drafting of PSP 1080. I will undertake to set up that meeting. So that's in essence the essence of the question. Mr. Casia has a second question that's in a similar vein to the first one, but more so seeking to meet with the General Manager of Community Services and planning officers to look at the first homeowner issues or the housing issues considered in the proposal that's been put forward by himself and his family to the PSP process. Again, that meeting will be arranged for you, Mr. Casia. Okay.
Sorry, Maria, I'm not accepting.
That's okay. So we'll be in touch. Next question is from Andrew Benny. Okay. He's in the gallery. Question reads, part one, council provides services and or funding to a range of local groups. How much funding has been provided to support these groups and services? Bracket, for example, sport, recreation, library, clubs, compared to disability programs, and how is equity decisions made about this funding to ensure all groups are supported? And the second part of the question is, what marketing has been undertaken to generate more patronage if, as the council report, that occupancy has reduced? What strategies were used, and were these evaluated for learnings? If so, how? So again, Mr. Murray Heaney.
Thank you, Andrew, for your question. On the first part of your question in relation to the other services, I can tell you it is in the millions. I haven't got a figure on me at the moment, but I will respond to you in writing. And I'll also include our capital works program that relates to our community facilities and sports and recreation at a higher level, if you like, and include the library recurrent budgets that we have in this organisation. How do we evaluate and how do we compare it? Well, I suppose that's a decision of the council at budget time. And a number of those discussions happen when we implement our council plan and the vision of the council at that point in time, and how the executive, us as a group, and the council implement some of those initiatives, including capital works programs, sports programs, and libraries, etc. So I'll get some further information out to you, Andrew, on that expenditure, if you like, and I'll pull that off our raw budget and our capital works program, and I'll try and break it down as per you've indicated in your question. The marketing, what marketing have we undertaken, I suppose, as officers as far as patronage? And this is in regards to the facility, because the facility has reduced in its occupancy and quite largely reduced. I suppose the strategies at this point in time is the staff, and mainly the senior staff, over the past couple of years have been advocating verbally to families for the use of this facility, where I can tell you at points of time we're phoning around and requesting families to come in and access this facility. And that is hard to take, but that is sheer facts. So from where council goes, Council is obliged to report to the funding targets in the state government and the federal government that we're obliged to do in the amount of hours delivered in this service, but I can tell you that the majority of people have not been bolting on our front door to access this service over and above overnight respite. And a large portion of the families that are in there at the moment, all families, are due to the staff having good conversations with those families or their carers. Thank you for your question.
Next question is from Stephen Woolley. Stephen Woolley is in the gallery. And his question reads, I have heard that councillors state only six families are affected by the decision to close Melbach. Where does this figure come from, as I attended a meeting where there were more than six families impacted by the decision? What then is the actual number of families affected, as this appears to have been misrepresented in the disability program alone? Mm-hmm. Again, Mr. Murray Heaney.
Thank you, Stephen, for your question. And it's a fair question, because I don't know where the six families that were affected come from. It's in excess of 25 families, and this is split into a number of groups of overnight respite and aged services that are run out that facility. I'm happy to provide you the specific numbers that, as it is today, in writing, so I've got the firm facts for you and the information that you can take on board is accurate. But it's a fair question. I don't know where the six families that have come from.
The next question is from Aaron Bowney. Mr. Benny, is it? Oh, sorry. Mr. Benny is in the gallery. His question is in two parts. First part reads, the council have stated they have worked with families to explore different respite options. As a family, we haven't been contacted. I would then like to know how many families the council contacted, assisted, and in what ways. And part two, has council explored different funding streams or avenues to reduce, offset the losses reported, and what were they? Again, Mr. Heaney.
Thank you again for your question, Aaron. The first part of your question is council have been in contact with a number of families, and I have that information. I won't provide the families we've been in contact with, but I'll give you some raw numbers of when we have contacted those families. I do take on board, though, your concern to say if you have not been contacted, I will find out why and when, because there is a document trail of when we have made phone calls to those families that utilise the service within the facility. So I'll need to get back to you with that one, Aaron. And on the way of has council explored different funding streams, we are funded to operate services within this facility from the federal government and the state government. Council picks up a large portion of the tab for the balance of that operational expenditure for that facility. And that is in the way of the shortfall of the funding required to deliver that service for that centre, and also the shortfall or all of the funding needed for the asset itself and capital upgrade in the future. So Council picks up all of that tab, and it's fair to say that we're always advocating for additional funding, mainly to governments, and it also Council is very conscious not to up the fees or charges to clients or users of our facilities when it comes to budget time. So I'll provide some more information to you, Aaron. Thank you.
Next question is from Monica Benny, who's in the gallery. Again, the question's in two parts. Part one, council have stated the proposed NDIS is a factor in its decision making to close Melbach. How will the proposed NDIS impact on services and the evidence to support these assumptions, as no modelling is available on impacts to respite services in any of the NDIS trial areas? I think if Mr. Heaney responds to that, then I'll read the second part.
Thank you, Mr. Tory, and thank you again, Monica. First of all, NDIS will impact this council, and it will impact all users of that service, and it will impact every provider that provides disability services, I have no doubt. The difference it will make to this council is at the moment we're funded in bulk, whether that's from the feds or the state government. Our council has that at times in its bank to deliver the services we're required, and the support and the additional funds that council provides to these services at the moment. The difference with NDIS is NDIS, once it's out, that funding package will go to the client. So the client will determine where to purchase his or her service at that point in time, whatever he or she is funded for. The difference is that the client at the time will purchase that service that he or she selects, and the provider, whoever it may be, and at the moment we're not saying that we'll be an we're saying that it's very awkward for council to be an NDIS provider. So the clients will purchase those services from a selected range of providers at that point in time. So they'll have a variety of choice, if you like, to select whatever service they're required to under their funding arrangement with the federal government. There is some modelling on fees and overnight respite already, and they're clearly on the website. And I can tell you, when we compare our rates at the moment, we are blown out the market of what's being offered at the moment. And the modelling, I think, tells us at the moment, or tells the state government anyway, and the federal government, that there's still a lot of work to do with NDIS. So no doubt it's going to have further impacts, not just on this council, but it will have further impacts on all providers that deem to provide NDIS, and that's why we're advocating and advocating very strongly to get providers out here into the city in two facilities, which this council is putting up front to get them to come out and house themselves into.
Second part to the question is, the Department of Human Services funds the disability programs and the Department of Health the aged program. Which program is making the losses, and what responses has the funders requested as part of their respective acquittal processes to explain these losses? Again, General Manager.
I'll try and answer that one as best as I can, Monica. So, yes, we are funded by the Department of Human Services for Disability, and we're also funded from the federal government for another component of services operated in the AGE program in that facility. Funders receive the information that we're required to report on in the way of hours or programs that we're required to operate. That happens. Absolutely the case. Their acquittals happen, and they're audited acquittals, and we're required to do that. So I'm not sure by what you mean to explain these losses, because really the losses are, to us as a council, the losses are the shortfall of the gap between of what we're funded and the gap that council tops up to deliver those services at this stage. Thank you, Monica.
Okay, next question is from Pauline Osborne. It's in the gallery. Question reads, what are the current occupancy rates for each of the programs, disability and aged? And secondly, the council state they have tried different strategies to increase usage. What were these strategies? How were they tried? And what response did they elicit? Again, Mr. Heaney.
Thanks, Pauline, again, for your questions one and two. In the first part, I'll need to get back to you because I don't want to give you incorrect information this evening, so I'll respond to you in writing and take that on notice, and we'll give you the precise attendances of what's happening in that facility, both on disability and AIDS. So we'll give you that in writing. I think I talked about the strategies earlier about the conversations with families and their carers to utilise this service. And the carers expo that council runs out here only about 3 or 4 weeks ago from memory, and there's a lot of conversations and advocacy that happen at that table with carers groups, etc. So I'll provide some further information in writing for you, Pauline, on some of your questions.
Okay, the next question is from David Ramades or Ramaz. Okay. And the question's in two parts again. First part is, if the closure of Melbach Respite Facility is a financial decision, bracket, with council subsidy approximately $220,000, close bracket, what actions or negotiations or contacts have been made with neighbouring municipalities to seek contributions to offset the operating costs? And secondly, with the proposed closure of Melbach, a residential-based respite, will the CALM program, which involves excursions, weekends away, also be closed? And if so, why? So, Mr. Heaney, you respond.
Thanks, David, again, for your questions. In regards to the 220,000 approximately, and that's a fair assumption that it's approximate because it's far north of that, I can tell you, and what actions or negotiations or contacts have been made with neighbouring municipalities. There has been some contact and discussions about respite generally, but no, I can physically tell you and honestly tell you there's been no negotiations with this council and another council to support the funding for the facility or the clients, so I'm being upfront there, it hasn't. With a proposed closure of respite, does it affect CALM? Yes, it does, but we believe we'll have other options for some of those clients in other programs. Thank you.
The next question is from Les Schultz, who asks, regarding the Mulbach Respite House, please explain the process by which council came to receive the house and the terms of the handover. Is it correct that the house was to be dedicated for use in caring for disabled clients? So part one, Mr. Heaney might respond to it.
I'll answer part one, Les, and thanks again for your questions. Regarding the facility, if you like, it's always been a council-owned house and was utilised as a council house before it was extended to take respite and community programs, so it's more than respite. My understanding is 30 or maybe even 40 years ago it was used for the administration of the council. Council did some, and I'll make a rough guess here, 13 to 15 years ago, made the decision to extend, modify and refurbish that facility with the discussions for the state government for respite programs and other community-based programs. We've met those obligations. And council picked up the tab for the majority of the funding of that of those works, and has picked the tab up for those post 15 years for the maintenance and renovations and asset renewal of that facility. That's the first part of the question.
Yep. Second part reads, regarding your press release about Mulbach closure, is it correct that the letters that were sent advising of council's intent to close the respite house were sent to the clients only, not the carers, noting that many clients cannot read or comprehend the letter? And if so, why would council take this action if it's aware of family needs? Again, Mr. Heaney.
My understanding was, well, I know that a letter went out to every family. I need to check on the carers. My understanding is there were some conversations with carers. Maybe not all. I'm happy to take that on board and investigate that further for you, Les. And again, we have a fairly firm document of when, what, who and when they were contacted. And some families weren't available at the first stage to be contacted. They just weren't around or they were accessing other programs. But we've made various attempts to contact those. But I will confirm or not confirm to you whether we have contacted carers. Take that on board.
The next question is from Diane Eaton. It's in the gallery. First question reads, if the closure to the unique and innovative respite facility for disabled and frail aged proceeds, what subsidy is council going to grant to clients and carers to cover their costs to transport clients outside the municipality due to council's decision? And secondly, is it correct that clients are prohibited from entering some council premises when accompanied by paid council carers? I refer that to Mr. Heaney.
First question, excuse me, in regards to the frail aged, there will be transport opportunities for some clients that meet our obligations and the state's obligations as far as being accessed for that transport. When it comes to accessing some frail aged activities, if you like, and programs. So that component may be picked up and most probably will be picked up if those clients are accessed and are applicable to attend those. In regards to the transportation, I think it's, the question is relating to other programs outside the municipality or inside the municipality. Council has not had the discussion at this stage about whether that opportunity would exist. I think that'll be subject to a future conversation and discussion with this council at the time. On the second part of the question, Diane, I'm not sure. I'd be very surprised if that is correct, but I'm happy to follow up with our teams. Absolutely, because that should not be the case. And I'll get back to you in writing on what the outcome of that is, as we will get an, we will respond to every question in writing, but I'll make sure we have the right information for you.
The next question is from Diane Chitz, who's in the gallery. Question one reads, regarding Melbach Respite House, what, over the last 12 months, has been the extent of staff turnover, the use of contractors in terms of client hours delivered, and are contractors more expensive to employ than staff? And the second part of the question is, as the council's decision to close Melbach was some 6 weeks ago, why has the council not issued tender documents to seek alternate service providers? It appears council's intent is simply to close Melbach and not to continue its excellent work with another provider. Again, Mr. Heaney.
Thank you again, Diane. First part of your question. Regarding the house, yes, we do utilise contract, basically agency staff, as we do with a lot of our programs. The main reason we utilise that agency staff is due to sick leave, annual leave, long service leave, backfill arrangements or adjustments to what we call staff ratios, depending on the number of clients that will attend the house at any such time, or generally illness. And, of course, into that mix is obviously work cover. Any absence from leave is generally picked up either first preference from casual staff, but where that isn't achievable, agency staff. Is it more expensive? By the time we add our on cost, it's probably on par, to be honest. We have a fairly high award over at Melbach in our enterprise bargaining agreement, and that doesn't come cheap, so there's some fairly hefty penalties rates in there. So if I was to compare them, I'd probably say at this stage probably equal, but I'm happy to give you those figures outright, what it would cost a staff member for an hour, and I'm happy to give you the figures of what it costs for an agency staff for an hour. So I'm happy to provide those in writing to you. Next part of your question was about the 6 weeks ago, and council has not gone through a tender process or provided documents, and I think I answered that earlier for one of the people in the gallery, that it was never anticipated that council will go to tender for this service. It was anticipated that we'll go to an expressions of interest to the market to see what provision could be occupied in this centre, in the facility itself, and that is still the case. In regards to the discussions, if I can just add to this, which complicates this even a little bit more, is the caretaker mode from the state government at the moment. Because as I said, we are highly in negotiations, or discussions anyway, with the state government and obviously DHS about supports for this facility. And we've openly had them out last week showcasing this facility and made it very clear that this facility, the priority is to have a provider come in and operate this facility for the clients that utilise it and new clients that require this service in the future. That is absolutely this council's priority. I need to make that very clear, but it doesn't come easy. In regards to the advertising for that expression of interest, that will probably take place post-Christmas. And again, we didn't want to complicate the world knowing we're out to the market at the moment for a larger facility for service providers to show interest. So I think it's very rare, if I can just share this with the gallery, and I think I've finished with the question, thank you, Diane, but I think I need to share that it is very rare for a council to put up two facilities to the open market for providers to come into and operate where we can get them. So I think this council needs to be commended on that, because we're talking over $2.5 million worth of infrastructure. Normally councils would offset sell that for whatever they can get. So I need to compliment this council on trying to achieve that goal. And I think we need to keep the higher goal in mind here, that it's about getting the additional services into the city and the more professional services those providers in to operate the services that these community needs and requires. Thank you, Mr. Torrey.
Thank you, Mr. Heaney. Next question is from John Goodman, and Mr. Goodman is in the gallery. His first question reads, of the $16.5 million of carried over projects, Are any of these projects carry over from 2013-14 year or before? If so, which ones and what are the delays? Requesting a written reply. Just briefly, I'll respond directly on this one. All the carry forward projects are from 2013-14 and prior. Happy to give you the details of those in writing and also detailed explanations as to why the projects have been delayed. The second question from Mr. Goodman reads, re-staff accommodation. As there has been no progress on the proposed staff accommodation on High Street, will the budgeted $6 million be returned to general funds, or will this project be added to the list of carried over projects? I'll refer this to Mr. Peter Bean, General Manager of Corporate Services, for a response.
Thank you, Mr. Tory. Through you, Madam Mayor, to Mr. Goodman in the gallery. Thank you very much for that question, John. It is Council's intention to continue with the negotiation for the purchase and ultimate construction of that facility, so it is still our intention to proceed with this and not withdraw our interest in it. The time that's taken in regard to finalising contracts of sale is really in regard to the fact that Council recognises that this is the first type of facility, commercial facility, to be constructed in the Melton Township, and also owing to the fact that it is in such a prominent location, both from a strategic precinct and from an aesthetic point of view, we're wanting to make sure that we get the right mix in setting a precedence for all future commercial construction within the Melton Township area. As such, the developer presented to Council the idea of what we were interested in purchasing, but it didn't in any way meet the energy rating requirements that Council would believe to be acceptable in regard to setting a standard. We're currently going through that process with them to get them to understand what level of NABERS rating we're looking for, and also it's in regard to the kind of fit-out and, I suppose, presentation that they are wanting to deliver versus what we are demanding. It's just taking a little bit longer than expected, but it is fair to say that we believe we are very close to getting a finalised agreement on this. It will not be concluded in the current financial year because of the size and scope of the kind of facility that's being constructed would be unlikely to be finished within the following 7 months, but it is anticipated that it will be well and truly started or commenced within the current financial year. Thank you, Mr. Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Bean.
That concludes questions, Madam Mayor.
Mr. Tory, can I just say to the gallery, because I've stopped questions being asked, this council is very okay. Thank you, Madison. Good night, love. This council is across the disability services. We are exceptionally sympathetic to the issues at hand, and ideally we'd love to see another provider come in early next year to be able to have a smooth transition with a lot more allied services than council could possibly supply. But at the end of the day, that's a wait and see. I don't want to give anybody a false hope that that would continue. And as for the NDIS, this council is lobbying to get Melton higher on the list for the rollout of the NDIS sooner rather than later, because at the moment that's 5 years away and there's a huge void. And I, like the rest of you, understand that completely. And I, like the rest of you, would be terribly disappointed if council sent out a letter to the children and the young adults and not the carers. So we'll look into that for you. But thank you for coming tonight, and we look forward to some positive outcomes, hopefully in the new year. Having said that, I'm going to go on to presentation of staff reports. 11.1.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to move in block the following reports. Items 11.1, 11.2, 11.5, 11.6, 11.7, 11.14, and accept officers' recommendations as outlined in the reports.
Thank you. We have a procedural motion before us, moved by Councillor Nadgley, to move those following items in block. Have I got a seconder?
Madam Mayor, I'll second that motion.
We have a mover being Councillor Majlik, a seconder being Councillor Turner to the motion before us. Can I see a show of hands? The motion's carried. Thank you. We will now move on to item 11.3, Municipal Audit Committee Minutes dated 22nd October 2014. Mr. Peter Bean to report.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I present to the Council this evening the minutes of the Municipal Audit Committee that was held on the 22nd of October 2014. It's a statutory requirement, Madam Mayor, that the Council facilitate an audit committee to undertake and oversee a number of financial and risk-related matters of the municipality. Contained within these minutes set out on October 22nd, which is set out in pages 28 to 31, are a number of matters which include but are not exclusive to the presentation on the review of Council's Capital Works program to date, conclusion on a legal position that was outstanding in regard to the internal audit on paternal child health care, an update on the previous internal audit report recommendations, the quarterly finance report for the period ending 30th September, the 2013 annual expenses report for a number of items which were in relation to hospitality and entertainment, credit cards and council's expenses. The final two matters I'd just like to raise before council that were under consideration was the final council action plan for the 2013-14 financial year and the presentation of internal audit reports for maternal and child health services and also fraud management and prevention. With that presentation to Council, Madam Mayor, I recommend to Council the recommendation set out on page 26 in the agenda, and it reads in two parts and reads as follows. It is that, one, the unconfirmed minutes of the Municipal Audit Committee meeting held on 22 October 2014 be noted, and two, Council endorse the recommended actions detailed in the minutes of that committee meeting held on 22 October 2014, attached as Appendix 1. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Bean. Does any councillor seek further clarification? Councillor Carley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Madam Mayor, I just have a question. On page 35, it's got here, newspaper article on corruption, Sydney Morning Herald, September 2014. Could I just ask why would an article about corruption be discussed at an audit committee, and what was the article about, and can councillors have a copy of that article?
Through you, Madam Mayor, Councillor Carley, it's been the practice of the Audit Committee in the past to raise any matters that are deemed to be of risk to the industry, whether it be fraud, often it's fraud-related matters, but just any issues that are considered to be of a criminal nature or a fraud or a risk nature, it is presented to the Audit Committee for their information, and I guess a general discussion is often held about what's the level of risk or exposure to this organisation based on the practices, procedures, policies that we undertake. In regard to this article, yes, more than happy to arrange for that to be presented to all councillors. It was in regard to a chief executive officer, and I may need the chief executive to assist me in some of the specific detail, but it was a person who had collaborated with a number of contractors in regard to contracts being let. It was in regard to some fraud-related matters that had been undertaken. It wasn't just one singular issue. It was a multitude of issues that this person had undertaken, and they were very sorry for their actions in the end, Madam Mayor.
Sorry, Mr. Cashier, please. Are you responding?
I can't add any further, Madam Mayor.
Well, with that intrigue, we'll keep moving. Any other clarification?
Yes, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Turner.
Does Mr. Tory remember which councillor it was?
I'm sorry, Councillor Turner. No, I can't. I think it was one of the Metro Sydney councils, but I can't recall which one. I need to refresh.
That's clear enough. It was in Sydney.
It was enough. It's all right. Okay, if we have no further clarification, do I have a mover and a seconder for the recommendation?
I'm happy to move that, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Majlik. Have I got a seconder?
I'll second it, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cugliari. We have a mover being Councillor Majlik, a seconder being Councillor Cugliari. All those in favour of the motion. All very good. I declare the motion carried. Thank you. Okay, Whilst we wait for Councillor Dunn to leave the room. Report 11.4, Heritage Advisory Committee, presented to us this evening by Mr. Luke Shannon.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This report presents to Council the minutes of the 10th of October Heritage Advisory Committee, and if I can refer councillors to Appendix Number 1, a full copy of the minutes are attached. Council will be aware that the Heritage Advisory Committee provides advice to Council on the management and conservation of heritage within the City of Melton. The committee makes recommendations to Council for applications to the Heritage Assistance Fund, which is effectively $10,000 per annum, and advocates on behalf of the community on heritage matters generally. At the October meeting, the advisory committee primarily discussed the details of the events for Heritage Week 2015 and also assessed three applications which were received under the Heritage Assistance Fund. There is one recommendation, Madam Mayor, from the committee arising from the meeting, and that relates to the Heritage Fund and effectively allocating the $10,000 grant to two properties, the details of which are provided at the bottom of page 36, which I will summarise. The first proposed or recommended application relates to a property in Reed Court, Rockbank, for the preparation of a conservation management plan for a complex of buildings which are listed on the Victorian Heritage Register, which is the highest form of heritage listing you can get in Victoria. And the property is also recognised in the Melton Planning Scheme as being of heritage significance. The second recommended application relates to a property in Narowee Road, Exford, to replace the roof on a heritage house, which is also listed as being of significance within the Melton municipality. Accordingly, Madam Mayor, the recommendation is as presented in the officer's recommendation on page 36 of the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shannon. Can I just make note for governance purposes that even though Councillor Dunn on the attachment was part of the meeting and chaired, I believe, she, under 3 Declaration of Interest, Councillor Dunn declared the interest in item 6.3 and was absent, abstained herself from the discussion and has done so this evening. So, does any councillor seek further clarification? Councillor Carling.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Shannon, when I look at page 36 and I see the background issues and the two dot points, where it says this property has received money in the past from the Heritage Assistance Fund, and then it's the second application was to replace the roof of this heritage house. Which properties are we speaking about specifically? I know you've given me the addresses. I'm not too sure where that is. What's the actual property itself? What's it called?
Yep, okay. So the application one, the property in Reed Court, Rockbank, that's the Deanside property, which is located at 96 to 103 Reed Court, Rockbank. That's the property recommended to have funding to enable the preparation of a cultural heritage management plan, or heritage management plan, rather. Does that answer your question, Councillor Carley? Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Casher, please. Thank you. Okay, does any other council seek clarification? Do I have a mover for the recommendation?
I'll move that recommendation, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Turner. Is there a seconder for the recommendation?
Happy to second that, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Majlik. We have a mover, Councillor Turner, a seconder being Councillor Majlik. All those in favour? The motion's carried unanimously. Thank you.
Can I ask for a division, Madam Mayor?
A division's called. Could I see all those in favour of the motion? Councillor Majlik, Councillor Kulviari, Councillor Carley, Councillor Madaluski, Councillor Turner and Councillor Ramsey. It's the division declared carried. Thank you. Now I've forgotten who's coming. Thank you. Welcome back, Councillor Dunn. We move on to the next item on the agenda, and I'll wait for the CEO to resume his speech. Thank you, Mr. Tory. 11.8, Councillor Committee Representation 2015, Mr. Bean to report.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I present to Council this evening the Council Committee Representation 2015 proposal. It's a requirement for Council to periodically review its representation on committees and other organisations. This is typically done annually, and it's done either at the November or December Ordinary Council meeting of Council. Should other requirements or opportunities come up throughout the year, it is not uncommon for Council to consider them on an individual basis, but it is typically something that Council do on an annual basis in preparation for the forthcoming calendar year. The process, as set out, allows Councils the opportunity to consider the committees and groups they are able to represent on behalf of Council for the forthcoming calendar year. There are basically two types of committees that relate to Council, the first being an advisory committee of Council that consider issues and make recommendations to the full Council. A number of those have been presented in this evening's agenda for Council's consideration. These committees' roles are defined under an approved terms of reference that is generally approved previously with Council. The second type of committee is the special committee of Council that have delegated power, of which there are only one or two that are embedded within the schedule this evening. Council have previously discussed the ideal of what committees best suit councils for the forthcoming 2015 calendar year. This proposal is attached as Appendix 1 for Council's formalisation and consideration prior to adopting. I flag that there are three or four committees that either don't have a council representation or the council have not taken up the quota of requirement within the terms of reference for the number of councillors that are able to be on those committees. As such, should Council choose not to fill these vacancies, they will be taken up either with council staff representation or that the representation will be run with fewer numbers of councillors than the terms of reference allow. With this presented to Council, Madam Mayor, I present the recommendation as set out on page 81 for Council's consideration. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Bean. Does any councillor require any further clarification? Councillor Magilick.
It's more so, I don't know if it's clarification or just to pick up on error. In regards to the Strategic Health Forum, I do notice that it says two councillors when I think it should be three councillors, and there is currently a vacancy. So part of the motion, I don't know if it needs to be formally changed with the notice of motion, but can we fix that and make note that there is three councillors on this committee and currently a vacancy?
Through you, Madam Mayor, Councillor Magic, thank you for highlighting that to me. I wasn't aware that it was three councils for that specific forum, but we can make accommodation within the recommendation to encapsulate an additional councillor should they wish to take up that opportunity.
Councillor Morrie Heaney has been filling the void for us over the last 12 months, and thank you.
Sorry, Madam Mayor, I do have another question. In regards to the Melton Indoor Recreation Centre, it says pending. What does that actually mean? And does it mean that there's still a vacancy on this committee as well?
Madam Mayor, that's my understanding. I don't think we have a taker of that committee at this stage.
If I might just add, Madam Mayor, that committee has been in recess, I guess is the best word, for some time. It has been awaiting a redraft of the joint use agreement with Melton Secondary College, which has been a little long-winded in coming to fruition. And so the committee itself has really been in suspension, awaiting a purpose, I guess. And, it's a matter that perhaps needs to be taken up again with the secondary college.
If I can just add to that, councillors, on my update last Friday with my staff, that the school principal has now believes he has an expert in the industry to work with us to implement that joint use agreement as it has expired, and that expert is one good ex-councillor in Councillor Pappas, which I believe is on the school council. That's my understanding.
Well. Yes, Councillor Carley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Bean, when you said that there was a few vacancies, the only one that I can see in my report was the one that said the Melton Indoor Recreation Centre pending. Is there any more vacancies on any of the other committees?
The one directly below at the Melton Waves Reference Group has got vacant written there.
Yep.
We have also have the Strategic Health Forum, which Councillor Majlik has just made a point by bringing to our attention that there's a vacancy there.
Yep. And Madam Mayor, there's also a vacancy, if I may, yep, to the Melbourne Airport Noise Abatement Committee, which is in the Watts Ward.
That's right, where Mr. Bob Baggio has gone there tonight to represent Council.
Madam Mayor, if I can may ask you a direct question.
Certainly.
How did councillors determine who would sit on which committees?
At last week's pre-agenda meeting, I had an email from yourself, and I also had the five councillors around the table. We had the list before us, and we saw who was on previously, and I asked a question who was interested. Those that were interested put up their hands. We noted them down. If you had listed that as an interest, I brought that forward onto the table on your behalf. Then we either spoke about our interests, and unfortunately you weren't there to present your side of that story, then we voted, and that's how it happened.
So when you voted in a briefing, was it through a show of hands after you spoke on my behalf of the committees that I wanted to sit on?
I put your name forward when you showed an interest. I couldn't speak on your behalf. Then there was a show of hands, yes. But that show of hands was only so the report could be written in readiness for the decision for this evening or the discussion for this evening.
Is that normal practice for this council to make decisions in this way during briefings, show of hands and voting?
No, but we have to prepare the agenda, and it's basically to give people an idea of an interest. And you must have known that because you sent the email declaring which ones you were interested in.
I did send the email in which ones I'd be interested in. I can see that I don't have the ones that I'm interested in, and I didn't take part of any vote. I'm just a little bit concerned. Well, actually, first, I have to say that I also do note with some degree of amusement that under the current regime, I've been kicked off the policy review panel. Obviously, some fellow councillors don't like questions being raised regarding the so-called reimbursements that they've received. But in saying that, from advice that I've got, this could perhaps be, I guess, interpreted that it's against the Local Government Act what's taken place here. Is it not? Section 89 of the Local Government Act?
Can I answer it first and then you may answer it? There were no decisions firmed or made. At the end of the day, it is just basically someone who shows interest. The agenda was prepared. This is the forum in which you can express, we finally make a decision as to. If you want to make an alternative, you're more than welcome. You know you have those understandings. You're saying under the current regime. It was under the current regime. I stood aside from the Policy Review Committee 12 months ago to allow you to take that spot. At the end of the day, I take aspersion to that sort of comment. I don't like those sort of words being sprouted, but at the end, you're entitled to your opinion. Everybody who wanted to be part of a committee, because everybody's got a desire, we've all run for council for different things. We stuck our hand up and we spoke, we gave our reasons why or why not. Unfortunately, you weren't able to be there at that meeting, and so this is your opportunity now. Rather than casting aspersions as to our intent, I would rather you take the glass half full attitude and say which ones you'd like to go on and possibly provide an alternative.
Sorry, Madam Mayor, was Councillor Tory, was Kel going to...
Councillor Tory would like to make a statement.
Well, thank you, Madam Mayor. I was just going to respond in relation to whether or not the process breached any provisions within the Act. And to my understanding, that is not the case. The process was conducted at an assembly of councillors and ministered as such, as required in the Act. No decisions in the terms of final decisions were made, but rather, like a committee of council, a recommendation has been put forward to the council for the council to determine. And that is very much the role of any advisory committee or any advisory process to the council. And the Act specifically prevents council from making decisions that oblige or obligate the council to a particular course at anything other than a properly constituted meeting or a delegated authority meeting of the council.
Councillor Cully.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. But, Mr CEO, just so I'm understanding where you're coming from, Councillor Ramsay said that a vote did take place in the briefing to determine which councillors would sit on these committees. So a decision was made in a briefing with a vote.
No, a recommendation going forward was made.
Okay, but for myself to be removed from a committee, there was obviously another councillor who had put up their hand, so a vote did take place remove me from that committee, did it not?
In a very technical sense, all councillors are removed from all committees at this point, because what council does is nominate representatives for the coming 12 months. So there's no enduring entitlement on any committee, because the appointment that occurred last year was for a 12-month period. And once that period has lapsed, all positions are vacant. Therefore, what the Assembly of Councillors has done, in an advisory sense, has put forward its recommendations to the council for formal consideration at a properly constituted meeting of the council.
Councillor Carley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Would my fellow councillors be happy then if we can defer this recommendation and perhaps when we do the councillors' committee representation and the decisions are made, that we do it in December in an open chambers and make the decisions then with the seven councillors present?
I have a question, Councillor Cully, if that be the case. I mean, I don't mind deferring it. But if you want to do it in an open chamber in December when seven councillors are present, why don't you do it this evening? There are seven councillors present.
We can do that, Madam Mayor. I'm happy to go through each committee and see which councillors are interested, and then a vote take place in front of the gallery to show transparency. I'm more than happy to do that. We'll go through each committee and put up our hands.
Well, by all means, if that be the case, that's fine.
Madam Mayor, could I just interject here?
Yes, certainly.
I personally think that we've waited long enough. This kind of something like this happened last year as well. We can't defer these committee meetings because next month is the last month. We have to put things in process. So this is the process that we've always had. I don't see what the problem is. We're voting on it now. If Councillor Carley wants to put up her hand for the committees that are vacant, I know personally if I want to sit on 10 committees, I put my hand up for 20 because I'm not going to get every single committee that I want, and none of the councillors get every single committee that they want. That's just called life, and that's just called having seven councillors that are interested in a lot of committees. I'm happy to go through this tonight, but I'm not happy to defer it till December, Madam Mayor. And the process, I believe, that has taken place is the right process, in my opinion.
Thank you, Councillor Majlik, but you got into debate. I really appreciate it, though. Councillor Carley, did you want to move another recommendation? Or?
Yes, Madam Mayor. I'd love to sit here and go through each committee with a show of hands, and I know that other councils do that, to show which councillors are interested and which aren't, and then all councillors can then vote, like I said, for transparency. Councillor Majlik speaking about merely being the end of the year, which committees would be meeting in December. Are there any committees?
All of them.
Oh, well,
all
I know that some of them won't be meeting until the end of, sorry, the start of next year.
Sorry.
So, well, I'm more than happy to go through if my fellow councillors don't want to defer it. I'm more than happy to go through it and vote.
Actually, Councillor Cully, I don't wish to defer it till December when all seven are present because there's no time like the present to do it. But I would prefer if there are any committees you find you want it voted on that you wanted to be on and you didn't, or anybody else, say so, because there's about, I don't know, about 80 committees, and I'd rather just do the...
Correction, Madam Mayor, 41 committees, 62 vacancies.
Sorry?
41 committees, that's excluding the ones that the Mayor should sit on, that are to the privilege of the Mayor, and 62 vacancies.
All right, so if I call them out... and you have got an issue and you want us to take a vote and we see who's, then we'll do it that way rather than go through each one. All right? But at the moment, I've got Arts and Cultural Advisory Committee with Councillor Madgley, Councillor Turner being the chairperson and Councillor Carley as a substitute. Is this one of the meetings you want a vote on?
Yes, please, Madam Mayor. This is the committee that I've sat on since it was established, yes.
Okay. All those that would like to see Councillor Majlik go on this committee, and I'm doing it... Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not doing it in alphabetical order. Councillor Carley. For Councillor Carley, there are two votes. Councillor Carley and Councillor Matuszewski. For Councillor Majlik. Five votes. Councillor Ramsey, Councillor Majley, Councillor Cugliari, Councillor Dunn and Councillor Turner. For Councillor Turner to be the chairperson on this committee, could I see a show of hands? We have a unanimous vote. So I take it that Councillor Majley and Councillor Turner are the allocated representatives. Councillor Cully, are you still interested in being the substitute or not?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Madam Mayor?
You're welcome, Councillor Carley. The Audit Committee, we have two representatives. Anybody would like to have this as a discussion point? No. I'll take it that they're adopted as... Sorry?
Sorry, thank you. Yes, Madam Mayor, I'm interested in the Audit Committee.
Was that on your list, Councillor Carley?
I don't believe it was, but I would like to...
This is a last minute...
Okay. I would like to be a representative on this audit committee. I know that I believe you have for the past two years.
No, I was off it last year. The Mayor was on instead of me last year.
And Councillor Malik's been 2 years, I presume, since we've been elected onto this council. Is that correct?
We found it very hard to get people to go on the audit committee. But now we've got
I'm
an abundance.
I'm putting out my hand,
so,
Amy.
That would be great. Councillor Carley for the audit committee. Actually, I'm almost tempted to vote your way too, that way. Had I known you were interested, you might have got on this one. Three, Councillor Majlik.
Sorry, Madam Mayor, when you say the names, three councillors, can you please declare a division? I'd like the councillors' names on the record.
I will. I'll just do the vote now, Councillor Majlik.
Excuse me, Madam Mayor, can I just ask a question?
Yes, certainly.
You just raised your hand for Councillor Carley.
I don't plan on voting for myself, Councillor Dunn.
Okay, but if you were quite happy for Councillor Carley to be on this committee, does the Mayor have to be on this committee?
I believed it was recommended, but it doesn't have to be.
I'm just trying to work out that if you're voting for Councillor Carr, you're sort of giving us an intimation that you really don't mind if you're not on the committee?
No, I'm just basically thinking that if Councillor Carley had stated this a week ago and we were able to discuss it in the entirety, we would have had leeway there.
Thank you.
I'd rather it's more of a committee for the Mayor, but I wasn't planning on voting for myself. Councillor Majlik had... Sorry? Councillor Majlik, Councillor Cugliari, Councillor Turner, Councillor Ramsey. Okay, and now Councillor Ramsey. I have Councillor Majlik, Councillor Cookberry, Councillor Dunn, Councillor Madaluski, and Councillor Turner, and I think Councillor Carley as well. So it looks like, sorry, Councillor Carley, there will be a division, but it's Councillor Majlik and Councillor Ramsay with those votes. But thank you for your interest. Okay, Borrell Deer Park. Do you want me to call the division now and get that in writing?
The Borrell or the Audit
Committee? No, the Audit Committee.
Yes, please.
Okay, those in favour of Councillor Carley? Ramsay, Carley, Madaluski. Those in favour of Councillor Majlik? Councillor Ramsay, Councillor Majlik, Councillor Cugliari, Councillor... You've only got two votes, folks. Councillor Dunn and Councillor Turner. And those in favour of Councillor Ramsay? Aren't you voting for me, Councillor Dunn? She's confused. Councillor Majlik, Councillor Cugliari, I'm sorry I threw I broke the apple cart there. Councillor Dunn, Councillor Carley, Councillor Madaluski, and Councillor Turner.
All that there.
Sorry, Mr. Tory. Yes. Borrell Deer Park, does everybody in agreement or is there an interest from anybody on the floor? Councillor Dunn, I don't think you could give it away, to be honest, but I don't want that quoted in the paper. She enjoys this very well. Okay, now there's a hole punch right through this one. The Cold Advisory Committee. Councillor Turner is our representative. Anybody else interested? Councillor Turner, duly elected. Calder Highway Improvement Committee. Councillor Dunn. I'm sure there could be a lot of interest. No? Councillor Dunn is it. The Caroline Springs Leisure Centre Users Forum. There are Councillor Cugliari and Councillor Dunn. If there's no interjection...
Madam Mayor, I was interested in this one as well.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Majlik. Do you want to take the vote tonight or are you happy with Councillor Cugliari and Councillor Dunn?
I just want to make a note that I was interested in this committee and I lost out.
Understand. Thank you, Councillor Majlik. The CEO Review Special Committee, there is Councillor Turner, Councillor Majlik, Councillor Ramsay. There's no interest apart from the three mayors and former mayors? Thank you. The Collingwood City of Melton Community Benefit Program. Councillor Cugliari has done an exceptional job on this committee. Anybody else interested? Councillor Carley. Was that one of the ones you put your name down for?
No, I don't believe it was either, Madam Mayor, but I mean... It was only a discussion in the briefing. Nothing was said in concrete.
That's right. But when you send me an email showing your intent, I take usually that for gospel.
But there was no decisions made?
No, there wasn't. Councilor only for a recommendation to this council meeting. All those in favour of Council Carley? There are two hands going up, Councillor Carley and Councillor Madaluski. Sorry, I'm getting nervous. And Councillor Dunn. Okay, then could I have Councillor Cugliari's? There are Councillor Ramsay, Councillor Majlik, Councillor Cugliari and Councillor Turner. That means Councillor Cugliari's formally elected.
Madam Mayor, can I ask that the motion be now put?
We don't have a motion. There's no motion to this, dear. Sorry.
Can I move that the recommendation be now put?
Through you, Madam Mayor. There is no formal motion currently before the Council for consideration. We stepped aside from normal procedure in order to go through the appendix to determine the appendix was accurate. Before the Council would then, I suppose, therefore, give due consideration to the recommendation that would become the substantive motion for Council to move and second and subsequently rule on. So, as such, if Council wanted to just simply move the motion, they can. We are halfway through a process, but yeah, there is no motion to be put.
We're not halfway, we're only up to C in this 41 committees.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to continue the way that we are going. Like I think it's great that the gallery get to experience how we vote on our committees. And I'm sorry that Councillor Malik's bored,
no.
I guess.
No,
she wants to rush it.
Please, could you please apologise, because that's not accurate.
I won't be apologising. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
If I ask you again, you will need to, Councillor Carley, or refrain from making statements about whether people are bored or not. I will now just give the names. If I don't see any, Councillor Carley, it seems like you're the only one that's interested in putting your hand up. Councillor Matuszewski, have you got any interest in any of those committees? Okay, so unless I see Councillor Carley, excuse me, gentlemen, rise, I'm just going to assume that the names that are printed are accurate. Okay. Community Grants Program Annual Grant Panel, Councillor Ramsey, Councillor Turner, Councillor Cugliari, and I've got Councillor Carley wanting to be part of that as well. So could I see a show of hands for Councillor Carley? There are three votes this time. We have two. We have Councillor Carley and Councillor Matuszewski. Councillor Cugliari? We have Councillor Ramsey, Councillor Majlik, Councillor Cugliari, Councillor Dunn, Councillor Carley, Councillor Matuszewski and Councillor Turner. Okay, then we have Councillor... Oh, now I've forgotten my ABCs. Councillor Turner? Oh. Now, Councillor Ramsey first. Can I see a show of hands? Councillor Ramsey, Councillor Matuszewski. Oh, Matuszewski. Oh, yeah, his hand's up. Councillor Majlik, Councillor Cugliari, Councillor Dunn, and Councillor Turner. Councillor Turner. Councillor Ramsey, Councillor Majlik, Councillor Cugliari, Councillor Dunn, Councillor Carley, and Councillor Turner. Thank you. So I would see Turner and Cugliari on that panel. The Community Grants Program Monthly Response Grant Panel, Councillor Cugliari is on this. And Julie nominated. The Community Learning Board, by all means, if you're interested, Councillor Carley, this is one I would love to step aside from for now with my workload. No? So I deem Councillor Ramsey duly nominated. The Community Safety Committee is the Mayor and the Deputy Mayor. Thank you very much. The Disability Advisory Committee. Councillor Carley. I'm actually interested, Councillor Carley. Would you like to say anything as to why you want to be on this?
I would love to. Thank you, Madam Mayor. But first of all, why did you just point out this committee out of all the other ones that I've put my hand up for?
Because
I'm interested.
Because Councillor Majlik and Councillor Ramsey both have disabled children, and I was just wondering why the interest, and it's been a long-standing committee.
Well, I'm a little bit offended by that. Are you saying that perhaps I shouldn't be on this committee because
I don't have a child with disability? Not at all. I've noted some wonderful initiatives that you've put up in the last 12 months.
Thank you.
But I was hoping that would come out of your presentation.
Yep. Well, I have put some wonderful initiatives to help members of our community that do have disabilities. And as you're obviously aware, and so probably members of the gallery, that I did, I was also a councillor in the city of Whittlesea where I was heavily involved with disabilities. So that's the reason why I'd like to represent this committee. I know that the councillor on this committee, or one of the councillors, has been on here, I think, since 2008. Mm-hmm. That's a long time. And I'm, it's good to mix it around a little and have some new ideas.
Mm. Thank you. Councillor Magic, would you like to say anything? That your service speaks for itself? It does. Okay. I have Councillor Carley first. So all those in favour, Councillor Carley and Councillor Matuszewski. Those for Councillor Majlik. Councillor Ramsey, Councillor Majlik, Councillor Cugliari, Councillor Dunn, you're testing me on my first night, Councillor Turner. Thank you. And Councillor Ramsey's substitute.